Steve and Byrne on 2FM.
Welcome back to the weekly podcast of what happened on the show on 2FM. Still haven't figured out a buzzword for that. But anyway, we had some big guests this week, including John Stamos talking all about his brand new show, Big Shot, which hit Disney Plus on Friday. As well as that, we spoke to Hannah Reid from London Grammar all about their brand new album, Californian Soil. Let's get straight into it. Hannah, is this like the most honest record you made, and did it have to be? Were you in that moment where you went, yes, this has to be, and I have to really, really put everything into this, all the truth that we've gone through over the last number of years?
It was kind of both. I think I felt like if we're going to make a third album, I was like, I need to just say everything that I want to say, because otherwise there's no point in making music anymore. Which did result in some kind of mad tracks and mad lyrics and some really fun experimentation that we did.
And being vulnerable like that is, you know, it's something to really be considered, because not only are you handing your music over, obviously, to so many people to listen to and interpret in whatever way they may see fit, but also at the same time, you know, there's no other kind of option other than to let that happen in that moment. So is this something you really considered and thought, okay, do I want to do this, or do I want to open up like this, especially on, you know, the last 8 or 9 years?
It was something that I really wanted. It actually did feel very cathartic and very easy. I think the only time that I noticed in not being easy was when I started doing interviews again, and obviously I've been quite difficult questions, and I'm now completely comfortable with that. But I was a bit like, oh wow, yeah, I forget that people are going to hear what it's about and they're going to interpret it. And but during the process, I just felt such a release. It was really amazing.
Because for you guys, that, you know, I guess that early whirlwind of success must have been really hard to just catch your neck. I remember when it just, you know, blew up, and it seemed almost instantaneous when everybody just fell in love with you. At what point did you kind of realize that this was all happening, that roller coaster you were on was not going to stop, and you were just firing kind of all the way up there, and you almost didn't have the time to think about it?
Yeah, I think it was about 2 years into our touring where I thought, I was like, if we're going to do this, we need to do it right. And this isn't right, because we've had like 9 days off in 2.5 years. And I became kind of unwell. I have a condition called fibromyalgia, which I think is because of that. And it was amazing. I mean, that whirlwind is the reason why we're here making a third album. So it's kind of bittersweet. But then at the same time, it does happen quite a lot when you see artists getting burnt out. And I think we've changed the way that we work now to make sure that that doesn't happen to us again.
And with that, your fans are just absolutely stunning. I was looking at the post where you guys, I think you said on it that you were thinking of starting your own Instagram page. And I was like, yes, I'd love to see Hannah on Instagram. And then right after, I went down to the comments and everybody wasn't saying, oh, I want you here. Everybody was saying, only do it if you want to, and only put what you want to up. And only, I was like, this is the sweetest thing I have ever seen in my life. That relationship is stunning. And it's obviously something that's grown over those years as well. Within, I guess, the last 12 months where, you know, we have had the opportunity to spend a bit more time on the internet and see that, have you kind of really engaged with that side of it more?
Yeah, I have. And we have been a bit more active on Instagram, and it is just overwhelmingly positive. Like, I feel that connection with them in a way that I maybe didn't before. I did always feel like at our gigs, like our fans in the front row just were crazy. You just would have people like dancing to Wasting My Young Years, or like dancing ferociously to like the slowest song on our album, and people crying, and it just, I don't know, I really have missed that. I've missed seeing those faces, and I feel really, really lucky because it is because of them that we still have a career.
And in that post as well, you were wearing the t-shirt Formidable Young Woman, obviously something that we don't like to hear, but also at the same time supporting such an incredible cause as well. My best friend is in a band. She has toured the world, and I went on a tour with her once just to kind of witness it. And in a band full of guys was just called The Girl. How has the overall reaction been to it? Because
I think what has been really nice is that since speaking about it more, because it did feel a bit like a dirty secret that I had. And now that I've spoken about it loads, I have had like conversations with my own girlfriends where they've been like, oh yeah, this and this happened to me at work, and or other female musicians, like stories like you're saying, and I'm like, oh, I'm just so not alone, like this does happen all the time, and I'm really glad that I've said something about it.
You've talked about the light and shade on this album, which I think is gorgeous, and it's almost important, I guess, to keep that balance with some releases. Do you feel that? Do you feel like where you do go, maybe to a darker side and reveal things that, you know, might be considered more upsetting, you have to kind of give that like a lighter side to bring us to a bright new day on the other side of it?
Yeah, I think my favorite albums have always had that. Like Fleetwood Mac Rumours has that.
Yes.
Yeah. Or you can have like lyrics that are quite dark, but that are in a song that is kind of upbeat sounding. And that can be a light and shade thing. And actually the slowest songs on the album, like All My Love, it is actually quite a positive. Like that's a song about falling in love. And it's yeah. So in that way, I feel like it's different maybe from our other albums.
There was a post as well on the Instagram that just made me completely emotional. It was nothing to do with anything that was written. It was the fact that you guys were all embracing, and it just was so stunning in the world that we are living in right now. It actually just brought me to a place where I was in a similar situation with all my friends. You guys have been through so much together over the course, you know, of nearly the last decade. Let's not wish our life away, but nearly the last decade. How has that been? You know, do you feel like that right now, that tight knit, that connection, that, you know, that you've been through all this and here you are at this point and you're about to release this record?
Yeah, I really do. I feel like we have been through so much together as a three. Like I've spent more time with Dan and Dot than I did my own family growing up. So it's had its ups and downs for sure. But I think to actually come out the other side and be better friends now than we ever have been before, and to understand each other, and you know, we can have disagreements and we can have arguments now, and like 5 minutes later we'll be laughing about something, and it's kind of amazing.
It is.
Love that so much, and how honest she is, not only on the record but also just chatting. I could talk to her literally for the entire day, and fingers crossed she will actually join Instagram, because we need more. But anyway, Big Shot hit Disney Plus on Friday. It brings a brand new team into the spotlight as the Westbrook Sirens attempt to finally win some games and hopefully take home a big title. Leading them along the way is brand new coach Marvin, who after an incident during a D1 NCAA men's basketball game is forced to start a new job in Westbrook as the head coach of the girls basketball team in hopes of improving his image. I spoke to John Stamos, who plays Marvin, all about the show, what he learned from it, and also his time in Ireland as a teenager kissing the Blarney Stone. One of the big parts of this show is learning about change and how to deal with change and how to let things go from the past, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's something that certainly I'm dealing with just in my own life. I mean, you have to let go of some things if they're not working. The line has moved. You know, there's so much more. I would say we were so much more educated. I mean, so many people are speaking out, and if you're not listening, then it's on you, because it's not they're speaking out, and it's their time, and it's good to listen. So, I think the beauty of Marvin is that he. It takes him an episode or two, but he listens. And it's not all, you know, you think he comes and go, you got to win, you got to win, you got to win, you got to do your best. And at the end, they lose. But he said, you know, that was well, Sherilyn says it. She says, that's the best loss we've ever had. And I say, you know, this outcome was unacceptable. But I said, but we're just getting started, you know, and that's a perfect line to sort of encapsulate what you're talking about. Yeah, I think
that is, of course, at the end of the first episode. That's not how the whole show ends, so we won't be giving that away. But for you, is your dad a massive mentor for you growing up? Because that is a big part of this series.
Well, my father was extremely disciplined, and I know nothing about sports. In fact, when they called and said, you're going to get this offer on the new David Kelly show, and I said, oh, am I going to play a lawyer? You know, do I play a character like in Big Little Lies or something? He said, no, it's about basketball. I was like, oh my God. Because I just don't know anything. But, you know, what I learned from my father is just discipline and showing up and being, you know, the best that you can be, doing your best. And that's all Marvin ever asks of. The first speech that I have in the first episode the locker room speech, it was just so beautiful because he just talked about at the end of the day, you know, you just want to look in the mirror and you could say, I gave it my all. I did my very, very best. And that's sort of, I think those are the tent poles of things that I learned about from my father. Discipline, being kind to others, you know, caring about others, you know, really. My dad was just a very simple man, but he was very, he'd look you in the eye and he would, you know, ask how you are. You know, and my mother was that way too. So I think those are the things that I got that I try to impart onto our girls in the show.
And speaking about that time when you were younger, in a similar way, you won a trophy, but you won a trophy right here in Ireland.
Yeah. You know, I was in the marching band and I went to John F. Kennedy High School and you had to raise a certain amount of money to go on this trip. And, you know, I think you could sell these candy bars. I went to the racetrack with my dad and I sold them there. And I think I went to the parking lot of Disneyland and I was throwing them in. But what happened was that a lot of kids didn't raise enough money. And it happened to be like a lot of the better musicians, like the first chair and the second chair. So the crappier musicians like myself got moved up to, you know, and I remember we had to practice like at 5 a.m. We'd be marching band in the streets and, you know, people were quiet down. And we got over there and it was like a Disney movie. We were just this ragtag band and we were like, we gotta show up. And we did and we won. And it was just a feeling that I haven't felt in, you know, since doing this show. But there are a lot of themes, I guess, that connect to Big Shot too. It's just, we went over there. We weren't going to come home without a trophy. And it was really something I'll never forget, that moment.
And of course, I know that because you posted that photo on St. Patrick's Day of you kissing the Blarney Stone.
Yes. I think I still have a sore somewhere in my... It's... Yeah, it's... You know, the idea of doing your best, I think, and I've tried it now with a lot of things. If it doesn't work, so what? At least you know how to do it for the next time it becomes a practice, right? I mean, it's not always going to... We're not always going to come in number one, but at least to practice that, to get that into your system of trying your very best all the way through. You know, if you lose, you still win because you've given it your all.
And what was your relationship like with the young girls on the set? You know, because throughout, you know, you're pretty tough on them in the first few episodes, but then that relationship grows and you start to root for them and they start to root for you.
I don't know how it is there, but here, I mean, I think the show is really of the time. I mean, the idea of a show with so many women in it and the reality of a guy like Korn, you know, releasing his assumptions and connecting with these girls, I feel is very, you know, I think it really breaks down stereotypes. And in the beginning, you know, he comes in. I did something that I'd never do. I purposely didn't spend any time with the girls when the first couple episodes. I didn't know their names. I didn't talk to them in between takes. And I'm sure they thought I was a jerk. And I told the director, I said, please tell them this is, and I just feel like this is best for the show. And I think it was. So I wanted to connect with them at the same time that Korn was connecting with them. And I did something also, which I rarely do. And I just trusted the writing. I mean, this is David Kelly. And we have this other great writer, Dean Laurie. But David's words, especially in you know, when he's talking to Louise in the car and when he gives that great speech in the locker. And I just trusted the words. I just trusted and it was liberating because I just said what I had to say. And I told the director too, I said, you see me dipping into any of my bag of tricks for this guy, yell cut. So slowly I got to know them and slowly I just, they're fearless. I saw myself in it a little bit. I was like, oh, because you don't know, you know, you haven't failed that much or you haven't had that much scrutiny in your life probably by that point. Oh, I guess in high school and stuff, but they just come to the set and they just go. And it's something that I've been trying to get back to for 25 years or so. And seeing them do it is inspiring. They just show up, they hit their mark and they're fearless.
They're absolutely incredible. And there's so many themes from this show that people can take and run with. So many lessons to learn from your character. Did you learn much? And what were the themes that you think that people will kind of walk away with?
Well, it's just, I think it's, you know, you put a character in a situation like this, a fish out of water, and you watch him slowly change because it's the right thing to do. And a guy like this takes two steps forward and one step back. But again, it's just sort of the themes we're talking about, which is, you know, putting your heart into into whatever you're doing, doing the best. If you can do something, do the best. And then I think the key too here is that it's have you seen a couple episodes? I mean, it's just so full of heart.
Yeah.
I think even just watching the trailer, a lot of people have said, oh, I got goosebumps. But it's not sappy or sentimental. And I think that's a line that we walk pretty well too. But I hope people walk away, you know, and doing what I do is just sort of putting that extra effort into everything that you do. And also, it becomes about, you know, Emma, my daughter, moves in with me at like episode 3, and it becomes about a father and a daughter. And I have learned, I think you asked, what have I learned? But I really learned so much about being a father by playing Korn. He wasn't a great father. He wasn't around. I've been around. That's the only silver lining, I think, of this pandemic that's going on. I've had a lot of time with my son. But, you know, I have this beautiful speech in the last episode, and he's trying to figure out what being a parent is. And he says it's spending time or discipline or boundaries and rules. He said, no, it's about sacrifice. It's about leaving your own needs aside for the good of your child. And at the end, you don't win a trophy and you don't get a ring. But if you do it right, you get a kid that is a better version of you. And I, you know, until I said and read that speech, I got fatherhood, but that really hit it home for me. So those are some of the things that I've been learning through Korn.
That's absolutely gorgeous, John. Thank you so much. Stephen Byrne on 2FM.